Hello, and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, April 29th, 2022. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place to find the stories that matter to you, free of corporate influence. This week on the show, Brent Patterson interviews Slido Molly Wickham, a Gidim Den Checkpoint spokesperson and wing chief of the Cassia Grizzly Bear House. In November of 2021, Slido was arrested at gunpoint during a militarized RCMP raid of her territory and held for 5 days in a jail cell. "We have never ceded or surrendered our lands," Slido has previously stated. "This is an issue of rights and title with our sovereign nation, and RCMP are acting as mercenaries for industry." Brent Patterson spoke with her earlier this week about the construction of the Coastal GasLink fracked gas pipeline on her territory. Slido has a master's degree in Indigenous governance from the University of Victoria, lives on Gidim Den territory in a cabin she built with her husband in 2012, and is the mother of 3 young children. Brent Patterson is a contributor for Rabble.ca and the director of Peace Brigades International Canada. He lives in Ottawa, Ontario, on the unceded territories of the Algonquin people. Here are Slido and Patterson in conversation. Take a listen.
Well, Slido, thank you so much for making the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So what I've seen in the media is Coastal GasLink saying that preparations are underway right now for drilling under Wet'suwet'en. And it sort of had this feeling that that drilling was quite imminent. Can you tell us what you're seeing on the Yinta right now and what you expect from CGL in the coming weeks?
Yes, absolutely. So we are being prevented from attending or monitoring the drill pad site. There are RCMP and a gate and CGL security preventing us access. So it's very difficult for us to assess what is actually happening at the drill pad site. But we have seen a lot of machinery going in. We have got word that, you know, they're preparing to drill under the Wet'suwet'en once again. We know that they lost their main contractor for that area back in February. Are rumors, unconfirmed rumors, that they either quit or were fired, and their main contractor was PAPC. So there's a new main contractor for this section of our territory now, which we have seen them traveling on the road up towards the drill pad site. We have not seen the drill come in. We haven't seen anything of that nature come in yet, but we do believe that, you know, that they are attempting to come in fairly soon. We also received information that they were requesting a permit, a leave of condition for their permits. And so what they want to do is they want to cut down some old growth right by the Wet'suwet'en River in order to put up double layers of fencing around the drill pad site. They're asking for a leave of condition for 4 different environmental protections that are put in place. And so they would like to put up extra fencing, clear the old growth right by the river, which is very alarming and concerning for us, obviously, because of the runoff into the river that old growth is protecting. And so that's about all we know of what is happening at the drill pad site.
So logistically, you expect that there would be, I guess, a large truck with a drill on it and all kinds of other equipment that would be making its way up that road to that site?
I believe so. It's possible that they won't bring it in all in one piece. We do believe that there are increased numbers of RCMP on the territory. It will likely be escorted by the RCMP. Okay. The RCMP have escorted other pieces of machinery up towards the drill pad site. But we have seen an increase even since February, when Gidim Den Checkpoint has been invaded by RCMP continually on a daily basis. There has been an increase in their numbers even since then.
it does seem through social media, seeing reports in terms of multiple times every day, the RCMP at the camp, I gather that's at 44 kilometers, it's that camp, harassing, intimidating people. Presumably that's related to the lead up to the preparations for drilling, or perhaps you could just say a little bit more about what's happening and why you think that is happening.
I believe that it is a lead up to the drilling that's happening on the territory, or that will be proposed for the territory. I think that they have said to us that they're there to make sure that nothing happens. They've used multiple excuses of why they're on the territory. They've said that they're there for our safety. They've said that they're there just walking around on Crown land. They've also said that they're there investigating, that they are there to ensure that nothing happens. Most recently, they're saying that they're there because they want to ensure that nobody's breaching their bail conditions for the 27 people that are still facing charges and that have conditions not to be on the territory or to be on the territory in limited capacities. However, there's been nobody that has been charged with any criminal activity at our camp or anywhere else on the Yinta. Nobody is at camp that has bail conditions. They identify everybody on a daily basis. They know all of the people that are there. The only person that's there that has conditions is myself, and I am only permitted to be on my territory for cultural purposes or hunting or trapping. Every time they come into camp, they are interrupting my cultural activities, our cultural activities. We have an elder and her husband who live at the village site as well. And so, yeah, they're coming in multiple times a day since late February, between 6 to 10 RCMP officers every time, sometimes every 2 hours, sometimes 4 times a day. At the beginning, they were interrupting and sneaking into camp at all hours of the night, walking through the bushes and snowshoes, driving up to camp with no headlights on, trying to surprise people. And every time they see the exact same thing. There's no activity happening other than our cultural activities. And so they are running out of excuses for what their legal authority is to actually be trespassing on our home site.
And this is the CIRG, the Community Industry Response Group. Can you say just a few words about them or what you see their role as?
Yeah, so the Community Industry Response Group, they have a detachment on Gidimden territory that they were told they're not permitted to have, that they're trespassing there. They are responsible to ensure that projects like this that don't have free, prior, informed consent get pushed through. And they're using illegal means, illegal arrests, illegal detainments in order to ensure that this project goes forward.
I think related to this, increased RCMP presence, this increased level of harassment, intimidation multiple times every day. I gather that's in part why there's a call out for legal observers. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what's needed, what an observer does, how one would apply to be an observer on the territory.
Yes, so we have put out a call for legal observers because of all the police harassment. And the main role of a legal observer is just to document all of the police activity that's happening on the ground. And that can be used for legal purposes and to hold the RCMP accountable. It's very taxing on our people to have to record every time, to drop everything, and to be harassed by the RCMP for doing legal observing work. And so we require and are asking people to come out to the Yinta to do that work for us, to help support, you know, the documentation of what's happening. And people can apply through the yintaaccess.com website to come to camp. And we are organizing some updated legal observer training to talk about the current laws, Western laws, and the violation of Wet'suwet'en law that's happening.
Is the idea that the observers stay at camp?
Yeah, so an observer would stay in the village site with with Wet'suwet'en and would be available to document all of the police trespassing into our territories. We're asking people, I think logistically it makes sense for people to come for at least a 2-week period of time, possibly more if people are available, but logistically it makes sense with our COVID protocols and things like that for people to come for that amount of time. And then they can be oriented with how things work, what kind of documentation we need and require, and it would alleviate some of the stress on Wet'suwet'en people on the ground.
You had referenced earlier in terms of the last major militarized RCMP raid on your territory in November, and a number of land defenders, water protectors arrested at that time. Again, just following through social media, that criminalization, that court process. I gather you have another court hearing coming up on June 1st, and some concern, or I guess some push from CGL that there are criminal charges against the defenders. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that.
Yes. So what happened at the last court date is that CGL asked the judge to invite the Attorney General and the Crown Prosecution to intervene and take over the proceedings. And so that would mean that 27 land defenders, including actually legal observers who were arrested in November, would face criminal contempt of court charges rather than civil contempt charges. Now, this has happened twice before where the Attorney General decided not to intervene for various reasons, including that it was not in the public interest. We are asking people to write letters to the Attorney General, to put pressure on the Attorney General, and to explain to him, David Eby, that this is not in the public interest to intervene in these proceedings. Because Coastal GasLink and the RCMP and CERG specifically are using this injunction to make illegal arrests, to bring excessive force and violence to unarmed Wet'suwet'en people that have a right to our territories and to defend our territories. And so we're asking people to write to the AG to try to put pressure on them that they should not intervene in an issue that needs to be resolved between governments, between the Wet'suwet'en government and the provincial government and the federal government.
And so June 1st, that next court hearing would be when you would find out, I gather, one way or another in terms of the charges, but that's not the end of the court process. It's presumably an ongoing thing, which is, we were mentioning earlier in terms of how all of this is taxing for defenders. I imagine the criminalization process and tying defenders up in court is a part of also that strategy and part of CGL.
Yeah, so on June 1st, the AG might decide to intervene on some or all of the cases or none of the cases. And if they decided to intervene in some of the cases, then those people would have to likely then go to trial or to continue with criminal charges and proceedings. Part of the issue is that CGL is using all of these illegal arrests as a way to keep people off of the territory. And so everybody that was arrested was given conditions not to be on the territory, which has been a huge hardship on us at Gidimden Village site. We rely, with our elders living there, we rely on people to be there to support camp and the functionality of it, to get water, to get wood, to do general, you know, upkeep and keep the camp going, because the elders that are living there can't do all of those things on their own. And so this has caused great hardship on people. It has divided and severed our relational ties with other nations and our neighbors that spend a lot of time on the territory. CGL is trying to paint this picture that the only reason that Wet'suwet'en people are on their land are to break the court injunction and to commit crime. They're painting the picture that there's no community out there, that there's no reason for anybody to be out on the Inta. And that's absolutely inherently a racist view of our ability to be on our territories and our ability to have guests and support and our relatives from neighboring nations on our territories. So I think that they're planning to drag this out as long as possible so that they can keep people from being on the INTA.
Just on that point as well, just seeing news reports in APTN and CBC about, along with the RCMP and CGL and the province of British Columbia, it seems in terms of the Canadian state itself monitoring the movements or the social media accounts of Mohawk warriors from Ontario traveling to Wet'suwet'en territory, the subject of meetings between the RCMP commissioner and Indigenous Affairs and the Privy Council office. I'm wondering just what you make about that high level, I guess, monitoring of land defense struggles on your territory.
Well, I think that they're very concerned about an uprising of Indigenous people in general. You know, a lot of different nations have been allies to us, ancient allies to us. You know, the Gixan, the Haudenosaunee are allies to us. And I think that it's because people realize that this is not just a struggle over this one pipeline or for our nation alone. This is a struggle for Indigenous rights, human rights, for sovereignty that we all share. And so they should be concerned about the fact that other nations are also watching what's happening and that this does affect them as well. And the outcome will affect all Indigenous people. You know, if a private corporation is allowed to trespass and violate our human rights, our rights on our territory, try to wipe us off of our territories, then they're going to do the same thing to other nations as well. And the oppression and globalization and capitalism and all of the, you know, the climate crisis, all of those things will continue and will be harmful to everybody in the world. And so I think people see that, and the governments are aware of this situation. And they're also using it as a way to, you know, to target certain individuals, such as myself. My name was specifically brought up in some of those conversations between government and RCMP and CGL. And I think that it's quite disturbing that they're going this route. And we know how these things end in the way that they can criminalize and, you know, take people out of this movement for standing up and being a spokesperson. Oftentimes, because I'm the spokesperson for Get 'Em Den Checkpoint, all of the attention falls on me, yet I am communicating out on behalf of our group, not being the sole, you know, I think they dubbed me the leader of the protesters. And so, yeah, it's quite disturbing, especially the fact that I'm being targeted. The other day, the RCMP showed up at my house with my children and served me 4 Motor Vehicle Act fines, totaling almost $1,000. And so they're just absolutely, you know, violating my privacy and the privacy of my children and my family, and also targeting me individually.
For people across country who want to express their solidarity with this struggle, wondering the ways in which they can do that.
Yeah, so we have specific campaigns that are going against the people who are actually funding the project as well, like RBC, they're one of the main funders for the Coastal GasLink project and a financial advisor to the project. And so people can visit our website at intaaccess.com to see the ways that they can support, obviously putting pressure on the RCMP to vacate Wet'suwet'en territory, putting pressure on the financial backers of this project, like RBC and some of the other banks and owners that are paying for the violation of our human rights and Indigenous rights. And then, you know, having people apply to come to camp. You know, it's very, very challenging for us after experiencing all of these raids to constantly be harassed and surveilled. And so it's very helpful for people, you know, to come and see what it's like on the ground and to also be witness and take some of that pressure off the Wet'suwet'en people that are actually living that on a daily basis. And so people can visit our website and apply to come as legal observers or as other supporters and can take action against these, you know, the investors and financiers of this project and to pressure their own governments to actually resolve this issue. You know, the police, the court injunctions, the RCMP harassment, all of those things are creating this conflict that is a deep-seated, old, old issue, this land dispute. This is not Crown land. This is Wet'suwet'en land. And it needs to be dealt with on a higher level. They cannot continue to use RCMP, to use CERG, to use these private mercenaries for industry and to put the onus on a private corporation when this is a larger issue and it needs to be addressed as such. And anything else will just create more conflict and more crisis for us on the ground.
Well, with that, I want to thank you very much for your time and for sharing all of this with us. And I do hope that those listening to this podcast will be able to take some action in support of this struggle.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Slido Molly Wickham in conversation with Brent Patterson. Thanks so much for that, Brent and Slido. If you'd like to read more of our coverage on the RCMP's involvement in the Coastal GasLink pipeline construction on Wet'suwet'en lands, please visit rabble.ca. Patterson has kept a close eye on the situation as it unfolds. Now it's time for a segment we call In Case You Missed It. This week, Nick Seabrook covered the upcoming Rolling Thunder Biker Rally scheduled to take place April 30th in Ottawa. The rally, which claims to be in support of veterans, will also feature a Holocaust denier, Chris Skye, as a featured speaker. Skye has been a vocal advocate against COVID-19 vaccines and mask mandates as well. Rally organizer Neil Sheard distanced himself from Skye, saying that his rally was about supporting freedom and veterans and that Skye was not directly connected with Rolling Thunder. However, on the Rolling Thunder website, Skye is listed as a special guest, taking part in the Freedom Fighters Canada March and rally. Also on the site this week, in part two of his series on how the LGBTQ community in Ukraine is grappling with the cataclysm of Russia's war, Stephen Wenzel speaks to Ruslana Natchenko. Natchenko is the fundraising manager for the Sphere Women's Association NGO, the main LGBTQ organization in the east of Ukraine. Sphere, like other LGBTQ groups in Ukraine, has shifted their efforts to helping members of the community survive the war. We're working on reforming our project to respond to the current calls of the invasion, as well as starting a financial aid program to support the community, Natchenko said, explaining the NGO's areas of responsibilities got a little blurred when the war began. Activism and NGO work is usually pretty hard, especially in times of crisis and war, she told Rabble. In environmental news, activist Howard Breen was briefly hospitalized on April 24th at the Nanaimo Regional General Hospital after being without food for 24 days and without water for 50 hours. Breen's hunger strike is part of the Save Old Growth movement's effort to protect the old growth forests in the Fairy Creek watershed and across Canada. Only 2.7% of old growth forests in BC remain. Clearly, this was proof that the government was prepared to let me die, just like they were willing to do with all of the other families and children in this province with their climate policies, Breen said of his stay in hospital. In labor news, the National Workers' Day of Mourning was recognized across the country this week. Every year on April 28th, workers who were injured or killed on the job are remembered. The Association for Workers' Compensation Boards of Canada tracks the on-the-job fatalities and lost time due to workplace injuries. The association says that in 2020, the year for which they have the most recent data, 921 Canadians died at work. And that's just 4 fewer than the previous year, which saw 925 deaths. The top cause of work-related fatalities continues to be cancers developed through exposure to non-metallic minerals, particularly asbestos. Also this week, Rabble columnist Lois Ross covered a decision by a Manitoba judge which will allow a lawsuit by wheat farmers against the federal government and G3 Canada Limited to go forward. The lawsuit alleges former Minister of Agriculture Jerry Ritz committed misfeasance in public office by unlawfully sheltering $145 million of farmers' money into an account that could be transferred to the Wheat Board's purchasers in connection with the Wheat Board's 2012 privatization. The Manitoba Court of Appeal accepted in a 2020 ruling that if this money had not been sheltered by the government, it would have been paid to farmers, reads a statement by the Friends of the Canadian Wheat Board. While this class action lawsuit is now certified and will be heard in court, there are still miles to go before the final outcomes are known. Approximately 70,000 Canadian wheat farmers may be included in this lawsuit against the government. You can catch all those stories and much, much more on rabble.ca. Also, don't miss it. Our next Off the Hill political panel is taking place Tuesday, May 17th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and will feature MP Leah Gazan. Rabble's Off the Hill panel explores the real impact politics and policy have on people and on ways to mobilize to bring about progressive change in national politics, on and off the Hill. Ahead of this free panel, don't forget to register to save your spot for the event and get your chance to interact with our panelists through question, polls, and more. You can find the registration link in our newsletter this week or on Rabble's Facebook page. And finally, Rabble is toasting to 21 years of progressive independent media. Since April 18, 2021, Rabble.ca has proudly maintained a focus on labor and worker rights, grassroots activism, and a progressive analysis on national politics. To mark our 21st anniversary, we're raising $21,000 in 21 days. If you're a fan of the show and would like to celebrate with us, it's not too late. We'd love for you to consider making a donation to Rabble. Please visit rabble.ca/donate for more information. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Follow us on social media across channels at RabbleCA. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to Stephen Wenzel, Carl Nirenberg, and Nick Seabrook for their reporting this week. And to Carl, too, for supplying the music. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca. And lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. Shout out to the listeners at CJSF 90.1 FM at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia this week. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.